now from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH. This is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrock and Tommy Gester.
And today it's Jacob Albrock and TJ Cleland. Glad to be with you on Sports Daily today here on this Thursday. The NBA draft is in the books. If that means a lot to you, it was an interesting top of the draft. And then, you know, the draft has its drama that it always does. We'll take a look at it all from our perspective. We've got all kinds of good stuff for you coming today. We've got the Royals spiraling out of control here. Just another really frustrating performance on Wednesday night that we're dealing with there. KU adds another big piece to the roster. Literally and figuratively, perhaps, as they continue to get things wrapped up. Our K-State insider, Tim Fitzgerald, is going to join the show as he does each and every Thursday. Wichita State Shocker Fred VanVleet gets another big contract in the NBA. We were discussing most successful Shockers in the NBA. Maybe we'll have a little of that discussion here on the air today and much more. It's all What's on Tap, brought to you by the Wichita Brewing Company. WBC celebrates the 4th with $4 beers from July 2nd through July 6th at all three of their brew pubs. It's a great idea if you're entertaining out-of-town visitors. Wichita Brewing Company, $4 beers to celebrate the 4th, and that'll happen at all their locations from July 2nd through July 6th. Enjoy a Wooshock Wheat myself. That is my typical go-to at the Wichita Brewing Company. Hey, TJ, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Drove into the station this morning. Really running on fumes today. Got to a stoplight. It was a green arrow left and sat and waited for somebody to go. So I got the nice honk at me this morning saying, "What the hell are you doing?
Wake up."
Yeah. So we're here. We got here, though. We're good.
Wake up. We're live. We're rocking and rolling. Royals kept us up late for no reason last night, basically. That's what was happening. How much did you lock into the NBA draft? It was an interesting draft because the top is so compelling. Then I mean the very top. And then it's kind of not as much a little bit the rest of the way. I don't know why this has happened to me in the NBA draft. I think it's happened across the board. The NBA draft has always been difficult for a variety of reasons to catch what the NFL draft, all the other sports are. We just aren't quite as locked in. We see less of the players than we do that come in the NFL draft. A lot of the time there's an international flair. So they're players we've never heard of. This year, though, I mean, you look at the entire lottery here, I believe there was one Frenchman in the lottery. Otherwise, it was all college.
That's
guys.
What I'm saying. Yeah, I was going to say this draft is different than the past couple of years because, you know, you take out. There was no the G League Ignite anymore. I don't think anybody's really going that route to get to the draft. The Overtime Elite didn't have anybody selected. So 24 of the first-round picks were all college guys. And so I feel like it's getting back to that point, and I think the NIL is going to be a huge part of that, of us getting to see these guys play in college. So if you're a college basketball fan, you know, there's a lot of names on there that I did recognize last night, not to say that I was locked in on Rutgers basketball, but I knew who these guys were because they played in the Big Ten, stuff like that. So only six European players selected, which, I mean, it feels like last year there was 15 or 20, it feels like. So this one I was pretty locked in on.
18 picks in the first round at some point were traded picks.
Yeah,
that's also a pretty wild piece.
Also the biggest argument of the NBA draft of for whatever reason, you can't just give them the right hat when they get drafted because the trades aren't finalized yet. And so you got guys getting drafted by the Jazz that are going to wear a Thunder hat while they're getting picked because the trade's not official yet. It's a whole thing.
It's the most confusing draft in sports. 19 out of 30. I was one off there. 19 out of 30. Just crazy. Ace Bailey, outside of Cooper Flagg being the number one overall pick, which was a given, Ace Bailey's story had become the most compelling because it kind of felt like there was a Shedeur Sanders element to his pre-draft process where he wasn't maybe taking it as seriously. There were rumors that he was trying to, like, guide himself to a handful of certain franchises. That doesn't work out. He ends up with the Jazz. a guy that was considered by many to be the third best player in the draft, goes fifth. We'll see how that works out for him. Look, kind of like Shadur, even more so probably. Like, it's an 18-year-old kid. Let's just, like, whatever, man. Let's back off and not worry too much about any of that. Two Rutgers players in the top five, which is pretty interesting. Mm-hmm. But it all, to me, TJ, for the draft comes back to Cooper Flagg and the fact that the Mavericks were even in that spot to begin with. You heard the Rome report before. And listen, I think I'm a Mavericks fan, you know, growing up. But it does feel like they don't deserve that after one of the worst trades we've ever seen. Like, the way that they screwed that up and the Luka Doncic disaster to be rewarded with Cooper Flagg is wild, wild stuff. Because they'll contend most likely with Flagg and Anthony Davis and Kyrie Irving if Irving is healthy. I mean, that's a pretty good group.
Yeah. Whenever I was, you know, like in high school, like I was really locked in on NBA. Like, this is the biggest lottery jump that I can ever remember since I've been an NBA fan, basically.
Yeah. How far did this, when the Spurs got Duncan, I'm relying on some recall here without the information in front of me. Like, Rick Pitino left college basketball to try to go coach the Celtics and Tim Duncan because they thought they were going to get Duncan. And then the Spurs, it was like a year that I think David Robinson had gotten hurt. And so they were randomly not good, even though they were always good, and they ended up getting it. It feels like that to me. Of course, Tim Duncan goes on to be probably a top 15 player ever, and they win a whole bunch of championships. Is Cooper Flagg that kind of player? I don't know. Is he going to be as impactful as Luka Doncic? I don't know. But I will tell you that I think he's the best college basketball player I've, at least in the conversation of the best college basketball player I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And so why not? Right? Like, why can't he?
I mean, he's the best.
It's just wild to think about that. Like, Nico Harrison, he'll just get to ride these coattails after making maybe the worst trade I've ever seen in any sport with a Luka Doncic deal. Again, not because he traded Luka Doncic. That's dumb enough, but because you didn't get anything for, you didn't even put him out on the open market. Yep. In a league where people hand out draft picks like candy. You got Cooper Flagg anyway.
True. I don't know. I don't know what the realistic expectation is. You know, you think about, I mean, he's the most touted first overall pick since Zion, I would imagine. You know, you think back to the past couple of first overall picks and like, what was it? Richesse went first. I don't even know who went first last year. It was one of the, either. Yeah.
So off like, top of my head.
That's what I'm saying. So the expectations are huge because one, it's Cooper Flagg and we've watched him since he was playing high school basketball the same way we did with Zion and just following his path. So, you know, he's got so many people rooting for him right now. It feels like I'm sure once he turns good, he's going to have a lot of people hating him and everything like that. But it's going to be a lot of fun. It's really cool that he went to a team that will contend and we don't see him play in NBA purgatory for the first 5 years of his career and then have to leave teams and that be a whole thing.
He won't have to do that. Anthony Davis will be next year probably the best player on that team if he's healthy, and if not, Kyrie Irving if he's healthy, and then Flagg can develop. Flagg, I don't know how quickly he'll become a star, but I think he's going to be a star. I mean, I think he's going to be a star. All right, we're going to take our first break. Coming up, Royals fans, we'll talk about the game last night. And then we will get more into a lot of different things today. We'll have some fun. We'll talk about Fred's new deal. We've got Tim Fitzgerald. KU's got a new player. It's all coming for you on Sports Daily. Don't go away.
Dude, you gotta hear this.
Go ahead. I think I want to hear this.
Sports Daily is on KFH.
All right, welcome back into Sports Daily. Jacob's out putting out fires, I imagine. When he gets back, we're going to start getting into this Kansas City Royals game. If you missed it last night, they fall 3-0 to the Tampa Bay Rays. Already a series loss, and that makes it four straight losses for the Kansas City Royals. The offense, with another zero on the board. They get three hit last night by Rasmussen from the Rays. Michael Wacha gives up three runs in the second inning, and they're never able to overcome it. The offensive struggles just continue on further and further, and we don't know what's going to give. And Jacob's back, so we're going to ask him the age-old question. Jacob, what does this offense have to do to get some dang hits on the board?
Well, nothing. I don't know. Be better. Be better at with the players they have. Like, I don't know. Like, I don't know what it is. I can't figure out this year.
It's Groundhog Day. I said it yesterday, and it's the same thing every day. Like, you could just tape what we say on Sports Daily and play it every day, and nobody would know
it's different. Not, though. It's they were better in May than they were in April. They've been better in June, for the most part, than they were in May. But it's just not consistent. They're much better. If you just look at runs per game, they're much better now than they were at the beginning of the season. It's just so wildly inconsistent. Like, why can't they just score four runs a game? Right? We're not asking a lot. And, you know, it'll be 6-7-0-0-1. You know, like, that's the part where it's like, how does this happen? There's too many good hitters in this lineup. There are too many good hitters in this lineup for it to be as bad as it's been. I don't know what it is. I don't know why it is. It doesn't make any sense. It really doesn't. I just can't figure out why the players on this team are not doing what they're capable of together, collectively, right? They're not even all that far off of what they normally do. Salvi has not hit for as much power as we're accustomed to. That's one thing. Bobby Witt Jr. is not hitting for as much power this year, but he's hitting. Mikel Garcia has been a revelation. Vinny Pasquantino is about back to his average, right? Jonathan India's a little under his average probably, but it's not like outrageous. Like, they all just need to be better. I don't know why or what has happened or changed or anything. It's not even just like better than last year. It's like better than their career, basically. They're just in a collective funk, slump, whatever you want to call it, and they can't get it done. Yeah. And this feels a lot like it felt in April, the last couple of days, against a team that can pitch. But, I mean, the opportunity could not be more right in front of their face. Why, TJ, can they not win games at home?
It doesn't make sense. That's the even more confusing part, is the fact that they were so good in Kauffman Stadium last year, and now they're miserable. Like, so, like, they haven't won a game in the month of June. Have you seen everybody keeps tweeting out that the Savannah Bananas have more wins than the Royals and the K? Yeah, it's true. They don't have any in the month of June. They're 0-9. So... And then they got one more against the Rays and then three against the Dodgers. So, I mean, we could legitimately see a winless month at home. But it doesn't make sense. Like, it's definitely – there's a lot of confidence thing. There's a lot of funk thing. I feel like even just watching that game last night, it was just, like, depressing to watch. It's just like, I don't – like, they know how bad of a funk that they're in. And they, like, as much as they're trying to just get out of it and not want to say anything, like – there's nothing you can do about it when you're that down bad. Like, I don't know what you do. You start firing people. You bring in a new guy. What do you have to do to get out of this? That's the age-old question in baseball whenever a team is struggling. But
yeah,
they got to figure it out before it's too late.
The Rangers tried that with Brett Boone. They fired their hitting coach early in the year. I don't think that is going to change anything.
It's not.
Everyone can just look in the mirror, I think, and there you go. Like, at some point, the players just have to be better. They just have to. Like, it's not, I mean, that's it. It's that simple. Like, they're going to have to just be better. And the problem is you can't wait anymore. We're almost halfway through the season. Like, they don't really have a choice but to wait, but that may knock them out of playoff contention. I do think, I still think there will be a hot streak from this team. It's kind of what keeps escaping me is when does it come and how long does it last? Because there have been a couple of times where it felt like they were about to get on one and then it didn't last very long. So maybe they're just not very good, which doesn't make sense. And I don't believe that because I think what we saw last year was not some fluke. They're hovering around 500, which a lot of teams in baseball are. Just the reasons they're losing these games, like to go three hit against the Rays, like at home. It's weird that everyone would slump collectively like this at the same time, which is why people would say, well, maybe it's a coaching change or something. But I don't think that's actually going to make a difference now. I don't think you're going to bring in a new hitting coach and be like, all right, guys, here's what I want you to do. Try harder. Right, like, what's somebody going to come in and even say?
That's the argument that's always been in baseball is that if your pitching stinks or your hitting stinks, you fire the pitching coach or the hitting coach. But the fact of the matter is that these guys are big leaguers. You're not going to say, hey, maybe you're squeezing the bat a little too hard. Maybe you're not getting vertical enough. It's like, well, yeah, they know how to hit. They just aren't hitting. Like, they just need something to get the juices flowing again. I don't know what it is, but. They need to just rattle off a heater to realize that they're good at baseball, because right now I feel like everybody on the roster just feels like they're not very good, and it's a confidence thing, and it's just such a mental thing that when the hits aren't coming, the hits aren't going to come if you're thinking about the hits not coming. And yeah, it's just such a collective thing. It's weird.
It's a wasted effort against the Rays. They're now 7 games back of Tampa for that wild card spot. But they're only 3.5 back of Seattle. They are with the Red Sox, on the worst stretch of baseball over the last week or so of the wild card contenders. But nobody's running away with it. Tampa's trying to. Tampa's clearly the best of the group through run differential, through record, through whatever. But nobody else is, everyone else is kind of right there, you know, like everyone else is kind of in the same boat. And so that's the thing that you just have to keep being patient. We know this. Baseball is a frustrating game when this kind of thing is happening, but you got to be patient. But to yesterday's point, how patient, right? Are you so patient that you don't put Seth Lugo on the trade block? Probably not. They probably will. So while we're talking about the Royals, because we've got, some stadium news that is kind of breaking here this morning that we'll get to. Let me just put this out there, because KCMO Talk Radio. Now, remember, KCMO Talk Radio is the station that is loosely reporting through one of its radio hosts that is, we'll call it, polarizing in the market, saying that he's hearing the Chiefs are staying and the Royals will come, and we're not seeing that backed up anywhere else. Well, this same station is reporting this morning something that I feel like contradicts that a little bit, and that's that KCMO Talk Radio in Kansas City is reporting this morning that Kansas will extend the star bond offer to the Chiefs and the Royals for another year. Now, this falls into our purview a little bit more. We will get to the bottom of that likely today, if not this morning, through 12 News. We'll put some reporters on it here to call our lawmakers and see if that's true. But if that outlet's earlier reporting that decisions have already been made don't make a lot of sense to the Starbond extension, at least on the surface, unless they're in theory and they just need more time to iron out the details. I don't want to discount that station's reporting. I'm just saying it's not being reported anywhere else, so let's be cautious with it. We've thought it was a hard deadline for Kansas. Maybe it's not. They've been kind of saying things lately like, well, we could extend it if there's an agreement in place. So I don't know, but that reporting is out there, just FYI for everybody. That came down just a few minutes ago here this morning. We'll keep our ear to the ground on that. As it pertains to the Chiefs, the Royals, maybe we'll have something more by the end of the show. Back to the Royals, back to Seth Lugo, back to the trade deadline. Something we talked about yesterday. Now, where did you see the proposal? It was Sports Illustrated? I don't remember.
It was like, I think it was one of like the fan blogs or something like that, or one of the writers that stuff like that. I don't know.
So an interesting trade rumor that goes into the, you know, we talked about the ESPN list of 50 guys, and Seth Lugo was, I think, number six there. Number one is Jarren Duran of the Red Sox. Jarren Duran is a guy who has come down to earth from last year. He's been a little bit polarizing. Remember, he said something he shouldn't say in the outfield for the Red Sox and got in a little trouble for that. But he's been a pretty good player. He's got a lot of control left, and he is a name that is being connected to the Royals, just because I think everybody that follows this would see it as, yeah, that would actually make a lot of sense for the Royals. Seth Lugo's also on that list. Boston, I don't think, is trading Jarren Duran for Seth Lugo. Boston's trying to sell. Seth Lugo is more of a rental. But Duran has a lot of control, DJ. And as the Royals have searched for that position and have somewhat of an abundance of good young starting pitching, it is a trade partnership that could make a lot of sense, I think, for both sides.
I think it was Jeff Passan, actually, that started floating out the idea of Jarren Duran to the Royals just because of where they were. But the thing is, I think that was about a month ago whenever they were still in pretty much contender mode. Now it's kind of like, if they're skidding, like, what are they? Because, like you said, they're not going to take Seth Lugo. They would have to buy Jarren Duran. So I don't know. I don't know what the piece would be. I don't know if that's like a Noah Cameron for Jarren Duran type of thing.
That's the one I think we got to talk about.
So I don't know.
It would be more than just Noah Cameron, because Duran under control is a more valuable asset.
The thing is, I agree. Like, it'd be cool because he's got a lot of control, and it's not like a buy to win now. So in that theory, it's good. But in the same breath, like, if the Royals keep skidding, are they in any place to buy anything?
Yes, they are. And that's where I think the conversation gets really interesting. Whatever happens this year, the Royals are built around Bobby Witt Jr., Vinny Pasquantino, and now Jack Caglione, and, you know, Bubich and Michael Wacha and Noah Cameron if they don't trade him, and Cole Reagans when he comes back healthy. Like, they are an ascending franchise despite whatever frustrations come of this year. So that's why they're in this interesting boat of where it looked like they were very obvious buyers, now to potentially half-assed sellers, we'll call it, if they were to trade Lugo, but try to still keep building, which I don't think is a bad idea. A guy like Jarren Duran is the kind of guy you look at in that scenario. If he's under that much control and we feel like their window is wide open, and I do feel like their window is wide open, then a guy like him makes sense. The question becomes, what are you willing to give up to get him? They've got two young catching prospects. You don't need two. I mean, just in all honesty, I mean, you're going to take two and see whichever one pans out, right? But I don't think either of them are the type of hitter where you're going to see their bat converting. They're valuable because they're catchers, unless I'm wrong about that. I'm pretty sure that that's correct with these two. So if that's the case, let's say it's one of the two, Jensen and Noah Cameron for Jarren Duran. You make that trade?
I don't know. I guess I'd lean towards yes. I'd probably rather it be, I don't know. I'd say yes. I don't know if I want Blake Mitchell or Carter Jensen of the catching prospect, because you think about, I'd rather have Carter Jensen because he just got called up to AAA, and he basically terrorized AA. So it's like, he's going to be more ready once Salvi's not able to go, which is probably coming more sooner than later. But then you think about Blake Mitchell, who is the fifth overall pick that they took. He's a first-round pick. So he was a high school kid, so he's only like 20 or 19 or something like that at this point. So I don't know if you have the capacity to wait that long for that catching prospect to be ready. I don't know what Salvi's timetable is the biggest question. And I don't really want to trade a first-round pick and Noah Cameron to get Jarren Duran.
You don't? I think I might. Noah Cameron, to me, is the more interesting piece than the prospects. I think, you know, Freddie Fermin is a decent player also. I don't think the urgency for the future at catcher is the same way it is when we're watching this offense struggle mightily to bring in a potential impact bat like Jarren Duran. That, for me, that's the key. Like, are you willing to give up a controllable starting pitcher in Noah Cameron it's probably not all that far off of the Brady Singer, Jonathan India trade, honestly. I don't know if the Red Sox value, or anyone, quite frankly, values Noah Cameron at that level, but he's proving it in the big leagues. In now 8 starts, he has given up more than one run twice. Yeah. He's had one bad start in 8, and it was against the Yankees. He gave up some home runs. But he's had one bad start as a big leaguer. That's it, out of 8. How long does that last becomes the question. What do you think of him? In a trade like this, if they want Noah Cameron, you have to do some like real evaluating. You're taking some of a risk in Jaron Duran. But if you look, like, he's down this year from what he was last year, he'd still probably be one of the best Royals outfielders. And 2 years ago, it's not like last year was a flash in the pan. He was productive 2 years ago, too. So I think the risk there is not any higher than it is with trying to bet on Noah Cameron, this being the Noah Cameron of forever. None of us, TJ, knew who Noah Cameron was when this season started. Okay, let's be honest.
Hey, he
was
a prospect. Brandon Zinner did, okay? St. Joe Central.
He was a prospect for the Royals, yeah. and a mid-level prospect, a fine prospect. But nobody saw this coming from him. Sometimes you have to be realistic, too. Like, what are the chances? Now, the Rangers probably thought the same thing about Cole Reagans. They didn't really have a place for Cole Reagans at the time. He was a pretty good pitching prospect, kind of stuck there, felt like maybe a quadruple-A type player, gets called up, boom, never looks back, except for the injuries this year, of course. So that, you know, that's in there, too. Like, you could have that happen with Noah Cameron. But in a best case scenario, let's say Noah Cameron is what he looks like right now. But Jaron Duran is somewhere in between what we saw last year and what we're seeing this year. Would you still not make that trade for an everyday player?
I mean, I guess I probably would. Just I think I feel comfortable enough to make that trade and trade Noah Cameron based on how the rest of the pitching staff has done and how much control you basically have over them. You know, you still have years on Chris Bubich. At least 2 years on Chris Bubich, and then Michael Wacha just re-signed. So you've got the space to do it. Cole Reagan's just got to avoid an arbitration. So I'd say yes, but it depends on obviously it's just kind of a shot at a dartboard if Duran's going to return to the player he was or if he's going to struggle. You know, like he hit 8 home runs in 2023, then he hit 21 in 2024. So, I mean, it's night and day difference, so... But honestly, I mean, what he's done right now is better than what the Royals outfield has been this year.
That's what I'm saying. Like, he's an upgrade, even if he's not what he was last year. Yeah. He'll be an upgrade. Reagans is only under control. He'll be under control 1, 2, 3 more years. So you've got him, Bubich for another 2. You got Wacha for another 3. That's enough to probably build a rotation around. Well, you know, you've also got Daniel Lynch that you could try to convert back, and you'll have Alec Marsh at some point. I don't know if I told this story on the air. So I went home to do some family stuff last week or a week and a half. I don't even know how long it's go. It's been kind of a time warp. And I go out with a couple of my brothers and my nephews, and we play golf. And I know a pro there in Amarillo still from when I worked in media there and whatever. So I was like, hey, you know, can we come? I need some clubs. He's like, I'll throw a collection together. Well, he throws like some really nice clubs in a bag for me, including a driver. So we go out and I hit one and I'm like, man, I felt good. Now, I've probably told the story here. My driver it's either 15, 20 years old. You remember the square headed Nike drivers, right? The square, it's old. And it sounds like a baseball bat, and we hit it. Everybody makes fun of me, but I hit it straight, and I know where it's going, and everything's good, but I don't hit it very far. And everyone's like, you know, you'd hit it a lot further if you finally upgrade that driver. I'm like, yeah, whatever. So I'm out there, and I hit one, and my nephew's got one of the apps. I'm like, let's go find out how far we hit that. Well, the worst thing that ever could have happened to me happened. It went a lot further than my driver back here. So I now have a driver. And it was another used driver, but it's certainly not 20 years old. I'm going to go take that out to Crestview Country Club, a proud supporter of this show, which we're very happy about, and get it on 9 holes for a real quick 9-hole round, see how it does. I'm pretty excited about that this morning, TJ.
Sounds like you're going to shave off 10 strokes.
I have. have to, right? Like, isn't that how that works?
That's what happens when you buy Tommy drivers.
Tommy talked me into getting new irons this year as well. My golf budget is blown for like the next decade.
Wait till you buy the Scotty Cameron putter. That's just going to change your life.
TJ bought a fancy putter. we're both about a 20 handicap. I don't think the putter's going to change anything.
It doesn't do much
for me anyway. Do you have your three putts now?
You can make an argument about it. I don't know. Whenever I played at Crestview with you guys that one day, the greens are rolling fast, which they always do at Crestview. And that thing, compared to my old putter, comes off the face so freaking fast. I probably three putted every green for a month after I bought it. Now we've got it dialed down.
You just got to get used to whatever putter it is. Yeah. I've never understood the putter thing. I don't even know what kind of putter I prefer. I had the old blade, and now I have one that's got the huge, you know, head on it that it's just like a off-brand whatever. I don't know. I just feel like you got to get good with the putter you've got. But if you have one that's probably better, then you get used to that one. That's probably the difference maker, I assume. I really don't understand the putter. But I'm always a skeptic on that stuff anyway. And then, I hit a club, and it goes further. And I'm like, all right, fine. Great Big Bertha is what I got, partly because I like the name. As much as anything else.
Max said he's got a putter. Max says he has a putter for you.
Yeah?
Spalding, this calls for the old Billy Barool.
Max will, I'm guessing that is from Caddyshack. Max will pull a Caddyshack sounder faster than any person in the history of the human race. He's got him ready. Max and Caddyshack. Speaking of Crestview Country Club, again, great sponsor of the show. If you want to win a round of golf for two plus a cart to Crestview Country Club, our last one of these we are giving away will be this Friday. You can text the keyword golf to the number 20357 right now to enter. One winner will be picked every Friday in June. There's only one Friday left. You can enter once every 24 hours. Message and data rates apply. More details at kfhradio.com. Get that entry. See if you can win. You go out. You play a little golf, you check out the facilities, you find out why Tommy and I love it out there so much. We have so much fun. We think you might too. So get out and enjoy the golf. Check it out. Golf 20357. All right, TJ. So this coming down this morning, I don't know how much I want to put into these reports because they're not. Now, look, here's the thing. Will Kansas extend the star bond? I mean, probably, if they think that they need to continue to sway the teams. I think this is evolved from, and this is the way it should go, right, in this sort of thing. Kansas draws a line in the sand and says, we got to have a deadline by this point. It's a negotiating tactic. That's putting the pressure on Missouri as much as it's putting the pressure on the Chiefs or the Royals. Then Missouri comes up with its legislation, and now Kansas is going to have to probably counter, at least when it comes to the Chiefs. So they just extend it. It doesn't hurt anything. It doesn't harm anything. It doesn't, if this report is true, and it probably is, then yeah, they extend the star bond. Why wouldn't they? Right. So I don't think it means much. It also is interesting because they've said forever, like, we don't need a signed deal. By this, was it June 30th?
Mm-hmm.
We don't need a signed deal. We just need a deal in good faith. Like, we just need a working agreement to then go in and fine comb all the details. So it wouldn't surprise me at all, I guess, if this happens. And the possibility of the Chiefs coming to Kansas, I think, is still small. And the possibility of the Royals coming to Kansas is probably much higher at this point. That's sort of where this sliding scale has gone for me.
Yeah, I mean, you said it. The only reason that you would do this, basically, I think that they put the deadline of June 30th, and then now that Missouri's just come out with more and more stuff, I think it's the fact of the Chiefs had 4 days to make a decision, and I feel like they don't like that they have to make a decision already. And what are you going to say? Just say, oh, well, sorry, it's all right. We don't want you.
Well, yeah, you could say that. You could. But the problem is, and I think they could say that to the Chiefs, but the problem is the Royals have bought real estate, and they're like, if the Royals really are interested, then you need to extend it if you really want the Royals.
Yeah.
I think it also tells us about an appetite to only have the Royals. we're all seeing the same thing, right? We're all seeing that it's likely the Chiefs would prefer to stay in Missouri and just renovate Arrowhead for a million different reasons or a billion different reasons, perhaps. The Royals are the interesting part. If Kansas has interest in only the Royals, then yeah, they should extend that deadline to try to get that through the finish line.
I mean,
we know the Royals have purchased some real estate. The question then for us is, should Kansas be interested in only the Royals at a, you know, probably a $2 to $3 billion price tag on a new stadium and entertainment district?
I mean, the deal that they have on the table, honestly, I mean, if you're Kansas and both of the teams are in Missouri like they currently are, I think that just needs to be an evergreen deal of just, you want to come to Kansas, we're going to help you out. Like, I think, like, it doesn't do Kansas any good to say, you know,
can't make it evergreen because what if the economy tanks?
Well, yeah,
right?
Like, obviously.
You have to be careful.
Yeah.
Still.
But basically, like, in good faith, like, I would tell both of them, like, if you want to come to Kansas, we will figure this out and we'll help you out a lot. And so it doesn't do the Royals any good. It doesn't do the Kansas any good to be like, you know, you can just stay in Missouri. Like, we're fine. Like, what's the pro to that? Like, you save the
nothing right
eight,
now.
0.8% tax on whatever it is.
And well, I mean, look, the risk too. Is always that it doesn't pay for itself. But yeah, look, there's enough incentive. And to the original question, I think the answer would be yes, that Kansas should be interested in only the Royals. The Royals is a riskier move because an NFL franchise is always going to be popular, is always going to put butts in the seats, is always going to do those things. The Royals had bad attendance, right, when they weren't good as a franchise. So you also have to bake in, like, do you have faith in – I think the John Sherman ownership group has done enough in its young tenure with Kansas City to tell you that they have a commitment to winning. Right. Like, it's not just that they got Bobby Witt Jr., but it's that they gave him that monstrous, monstrous deal. It's that they have spent as much money, honestly, as anybody in free agency over the last couple of years. They're making good decisions, even as frustrating as this year has been. They're making good decisions now. And I think it's a safe enough bet that, yeah, look, the money, even in the development and the, you know, the jobs it would create and the tax income for salaries, these massive payroll salaries that would come in, I think you can still justify it. So, yes, as it looks like the Chiefs are probably staying in Missouri, Kansas should redo its efforts to woo away the Royals. I'm good with that. And in order to do that, they needed to make an extension. So, you know, we'll wait to confirm that news on our own. But again, KCMO Talk Radio this morning reporting that the Star Bond offer will be extended another 12 months. I mean, it makes sense. It makes sense. And I think it's fine. It's a counter to a very aggressive, finally, offer from the state of Missouri. And I have no problem with that. That's a negotiation. That's how this works. You draw your line in the sand, and then you're willing to erase that line pretty quickly when you need to.
I'm wondering, I wonder what your take on this. We haven't talked about this. Is the real estate that the Royals bought, the whole idea of everything that they were doing was always originally a new stadium, but they wanted downtown baseball, and that got vetoed, basically. That's not a thing anymore. Like, it really can't
Well,
happen.
I think they would like for it to be a thing. I think their first choice would be yes, to be downtown.
Yeah, I don't know what capacity that could happen anymore after the vote got denied. But anyways... If they move to Kansas where they got this real estate, like, how does that, like, can they build around that? I think that's a huge factor into how successful this will be, is the fact of, is it just going to be a stadium in suburban Olathe or in Overland Park, or is it going to be turned into a ballpark village around it? How much is Kansas going to invest in the area around the stadium?
If they go to Legends, which is what
that'd be perfect.
KCMO reports they can buy real estate and not do anything with it. They've got a lot of money. Real estate's one of those things that over time doesn't typically lose its value. So that, yeah, they bought that other real estate, which I'm not familiar with, that Sprint area or whatever. Mm-hmm. They bought that. They can sell it. Like, it's not like they eat the money. Like, they just would, over time, they would just turn around and sell it. Yeah. I think Legends would always make the most sense because now you're kind of doubling into another Star Bond where you've got this racetrack, which, correct me if I'm wrong, the racetrack is one of the things that actually has paid for itself through a Star Bond. It's been a successful one. I think so.
I know it was Star Bond, yeah.
I believe that it's one of the ones. There have been some that haven't been you know, successful. That one, I believe, is one of the ones. Where's our guy Sean Logging when we need him?
Kidding.
I think the racetrack has been one that has worked. So if you can double into that, and then because now you've got Sporting KC up there, you've got several things where if you built up an entertainment district, you've got so much usage out of that between the three entities that it makes a ton of sense. We act like Kansas doesn't have Kansas doesn't have any pro team. No, Kansas has a NASCAR track and Kansas has a pro soccer team. Mm-hmm. Like it's not, you're not putting this out in the middle of nowhere here. So if they could get it into that area, then it would make sense. Yeah. To build that area up. Sure. And I think that would help the Starbond be more successful because now you're paying that back through whatever gets used out of Sporting, whatever gets used out of the racetrack. You know, who knows what else they could put up there with that to also generate money outside of just like hotels and restaurants. But that's one big thing. And, you know, if you've seen some of the new stadiums being built, I use what the Cowboys and the Rangers have done in that area around those ballparks, which were awesome. Quite frankly, in the middle of nowhere, relatively speaking in Arlington. That area is awesome.
Yeah,
it's so much fun.
If you drive a block, you're in random houses in Arlington.
But the area itself is really
that's
cool.
That's how good they've done.
And so hopefully, you know, something, I don't know. We'll see, but we'll continue to follow that this morning. We'll see if we get any more news on it. Coming up at hour number two, our guy Tim Fitzgerald stops by. We got to talk about this new KU player, maybe a little bit more on the NBA draft. A lot to get to here on Sports Daily. Don't go away.